B'shalach Tavshin Samach Tes. The objective of our class today is to understand what is the lasting impact on the Jewish people of the experiences on the Yam. How did it change us? What kind of a nation did it make us into? How did it change our inner thinking, the way we think, the way we feel? And we're going to ask a couple of technical questions. One about the content of Az Yashir, basically what is it about? And two about tefillah. Number one, the placement of Az Yashir in the tefillah, and number two, the nature of the Shema, which is found in the tefillah. We'll get to that. Let's start with the first question. First question is, if I would ask you, just off the cuff, we all say Az Yashir pretty much every day. We say it on Shabbos and Yontiv. It's familiar to us. If I would ask you, what is the basic message of the Shira? What would the answer be? 9 times out of 10, the answer will be that we're praising Hashem for the nace of Kriyas Yamsuf. However, if you look through the Shira, you will be surprised to find out that nowhere in the Shira is Kriyas Yamsuf even mentioned. Okay? It is the splitting of the sea does not show up in the Shira. It's not about the nace of Hashem changing nature and moving the waters aside revealing the dry land. There is only a single pasuk in the Shira that refers to the water being, what we might call split. And that is the pasuk, Beruach apecha nermu mayim. With the blast from your nostrils, the water. Now, nermu is a funny word. You could say, as Rashi does, piled up. But Unkelis translates it as chakimu, acted with intelligence, doesn't give you the literal translation of standing, you know, like a pile. Nevertheless, even with this vague reference, it doesn't say boka hamayim or kara hayam. It's some type of reference to what happened after the yam split, that the water was piled up. But the actual splitting doesn't occur. So it's not about the nace of the splitting of the yam. What the Shira really is about, if you look into it, is a sense of astonishment and awe on behalf of Klal Yisrael, and, of course, the awareness that Hashem is so mighty and powerful, and that Klal Yisrael recognized, because of the drowning of the Mitzrayim, which is the bulk of the information in the Shira. It's all about the drowning of the Egyptians, the returning of the water to its natural state, the huge waves and crashing, the crashing waves and the turmoil of the water that drowned them all in different phases and different ways. That is, B'nai Yisrael see that, and there's a gratitude that they're relieved of their enemies, that Hashem has punished, finally, those that deserve to be punished. Finally, there's Tzadik V'Tovlo, Rasha V'Ralo. Finally, nature makes sense. Nature's behavior makes sense, and they develop because of this a great gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and a great sense of closeness to Hashem and a great awareness of Hashem, to the point that they say, Zeh Keli V'Anveyu, this, I see it with my own eyes, so to speak, Hashem's revelation in what's happening here. And they are elevated to the point that they sing Shira from this experience. So the bulk of the Shira is about the drowning of the Egyptians and the response, the relief and the gratitude of Klal Yisrael to that, and the awareness of Hashem's mastery and control and interference in history and interference in the lives of humanity. That's what the Shira is about. Now, the question is, if the Shira is about this, is about mostly the drowning of the Egyptians and the gratitude they had to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that, and not just the drowning of the Egyptians. By the way, the end of the Shira also makes a point of stating that it wasn't just that their enemies were neutralized, their immediate enemies, the Egyptians, but all the potential enemies of the nations surrounding Canaan that they were heading towards, who would pose a threat, that they were also neutralized by what they heard. So that the Jewish people had a sense for the first time of relief, a sense that they were not threatened at every front. That's really the bulk of the Shira, that they can move forward, calmly into the next stage. If that's the case, then the question is, what about the placement of Az Yashir in the tefillah? As we know it today, it comes at the end of Psukei Dezimra. Now, Psukei Dezimra are praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meant to glorify Hashem in our eyes. And that makes sense that Az Yashir should be part of Psukei Dezimra, because of all things, there's no greater praise than Az Yashir. The problem is that all the previous parts of Psukei Dezimra, Hodu, Ashrei, the Halalukas, Vayvarech David, all of those basically come from Tehillim, or the writings of David. And Az Yashir comes from the Torah itself, and is much more primary, and much more astonishing in its ability to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu and what it's speaking about. So why would Az Yashir come at the end of Psukei Dezimra? If anything, it belongs at the beginning of Psukei Dezimra. So that's the first question that is really asked. You know, why is Psukei Dezimra here? And strangely enough, Rav Moshe Shapira points out that although we are used to saying Az Yashir, our minhag is to say Az Yashir in Psukei Dezimra, the Rambam points out in his Hilchas Tefillah that actually the Az Yashir was said, I guess in his area or for a time, after the end of Psukei Dezimra, after Yishtabach, prior to Kriya Shema. That really was, I guess, the original placement of Az Yashir. That's Rambam's Hilchos Tefillah, that it was said prior to Kriya Shema. Now, the question is, if that's the case, then Az Yashir has a lot more to do with Kriya Shema than it has to do with Psukei Dezimra. It is definitely a praise, but more than a praise, it's closely linked to Shema, and it serves some great purpose that must precede Shema. So now that's our question. Why does Shema have to be preceded by Az Yashir? What does Az Yashir add to or set us up for, prepare us for before we get to Shema? First of all, that leads us to ask really a question about Shema itself. What is Shema in the prayer? Now, the question is even more basic. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad and V'yahavta. Those are psukim from the Torah. In fact, we spoke about them last week in the discussion about tefillin. Are they prayer at all? Why are they in the prayer sequence, period? Do they have shevach, bakashav, and hoda'ah, the three necessary components of prayer? Do they praise Hashem? No. Do they ask for anything? No. And do they thank Hashem? No. What is Shema? Shema is a statement of Hashem's oneness, a discussion of the great love that must exist, really a imperative to love, to be bonded with Hashem in our hearts and in our souls, and to be committed to studying His Torah. That's the first paragraph, Yahavta. V'hayim Shemoa is already about Kabbalas HaMitzvahs. That's the next step. But before Kabbalah HaMitzvahs, we talk about that there's nothing but Hashem, Echad. We're bound in love to Hashem, and we're committed to know everything we could and to pass it on to our children and set up our lives based on our knowledge, to just have it infuse our thinking. And then is the technical aspects of accepting and doing the mitzvahs and the responsibility to do the mitzvahs. So it's not even prayer, you would think, at all. What kind of prayer is it? It's testimony. It's like an edus. Where does it become tefillah? So, the fact is that that's a good question. And Rav Moshe Shapira brings down here really a quote from the Zohar. And he says the following. When B'nai Yisrael, read in English, it's really in Aramaic, when Israel concludes the praises, which are the praises of David, that's Psukei Dezimra. This is from the Zohar explaining the order of tefillah. When Yisrael concludes the praises, which are the praises of David, then they recite the praise of the Song of the Sea. So he says that the Shir al Hayam comes after Psukei Dezimra, okay, which we still keep it at the end, but we keep it still before the brachas of Kriya Shema. There's a Kaddish between Yishtabach and the brachas of Kriya Shema. The two brachas preceding Kriya Shema are called Birchas Kriya Shema. And there is a stop between Az Yashir and them. He says, still, we put it at the end. After we finish the praises of David, then we recite the praise of the Song of the Sea. And if one asks, why this praise is established last, after the praises of David, when the written Torah precedes the prophets and the writings, and likewise this praise should come first, the explanation is this praise is greater than all of the praises in the world, and the divine presence is not rectified through any praise as it is rectified through this praise. For this reason, it is juxtaposed with the seated prayer. The seated prayer is called Salusa Demyushav, the seated prayer. So, when they talk about Salusa Demyushav, the seated prayer, they're talking about Shema. Shema is called the seated prayer. And Oz Yashar has to be near Shema, but you see from the prayer, Salusa Demyushav, seated, you sit. You're supposed to sit in Shema. You're supposed to sit. Okay, now, the fact is we see two things. You see that it's ancient, that Oz Yashar is linked to Shema. It's an ancient concept, not way before the Rambam. And second of all, that you see that Shema is called a prayer. Shema is referred to as a tefillah. But we don't see any of the aspects of tefillah in the Shema. That's the problem. What we see is the three components, as we said, Hashem's oneness, the love bond between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the commitment to study. So in order to understand how Shema is a tefillah, and that it is referred to as a tefillah, we have to understand what Shema is. So we know that it expresses the oneness, it expresses the absolute love of a person for Hashem, and closeness and desire to be linked, and the commitment to study. All of that put together, we call Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim, which you know. When a person says Shema, they have to have Kavana. Otherwise, they're just mumbling, and it's a waste of time. And it's not tefillah at all. They have to have Kavana to be Mekabel Ol Malchus Shemayim, to accept the yoke of heaven. Everybody knows that. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad is Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim. Generally, mitzvahs don't need Kavana, but tefillah is different, because tefillah is only Kavana. Without Kavana, it's not tefillah. Certainly for Shema, that's an absolute rule. And hopefully for the first paragraph in Shemona Esrei, supposed to have Kavana. The truth is, in the other tefillahs, if a person is just having Kavana to daven, but doesn't think of the meaning of each word, they're still Yotze, but not in Shema. Because you can't be Makabal or Malchus Shemayim without knowing that you're Makabal. It's a conscious awareness. That's what it is, in its essence. Okay, so Shema is Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim, accepting the yoke of heaven. By the way, just a tangent, just a little, you know, a little nugget on the side, which we've mentioned here before, but it's so sharp and important to keep in mind. When we are Makabal Ol Malchus Shemayim, in essence what we're doing is we're bringing ourselves back to Har Sinai for a moment. That's when we first were Makabal Ol Malchus Shemayim, right? So Shema Yisrael actually reiterates the first two Dibros. This is what Huttner points out, but he's not the only one who points this out. Shema reiterates the first two Dibros. The first two Dibros are Anochi Hashem Elokecha and Lo Yielecha Elohim Acherim. Shema says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu. Hashem Elokeinu is parallel to Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And Hashem Echad is parallel to Lo Yielecha Elohim Acherim. So when we say Shema, we are affirming our commitment again to the first two Dibros, which we heard on Sinai, and we accepted them as we're accepting them again today, and they're real to us today as they always were, as they were that day. And just like in Sinai, first we accepted Anochi and Lo Yelecha, and then we accepted the rest of the commandments, which were mitzvos. So in Shema, first we say Hashem is one, and there's no other, and we're bound in love, and we're committed to the study of all, knowing as much as we could, and then we accept the mitzvahs. Same pattern. So Shema is Kabbalas Ol. It's accepting the yoke of heaven, particularly in the words. It's built as a reference to the Dibros, the first two Dibros. There's a problem, though. How is Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim Tefillah? How is that a form of Tefillah? It's called Tefillah in the Zohar. It's also called Tefillah in the Chumash itself. How's that? Remember the pasuk we worked with in Shemos when Moshe was at the Sneh And he said, they're not going to believe me because why should they believe that I'm speaking in your name and giving them this whole huge body of law? How are they, why don't, you know, they have no business believing me when I tell them I'm a Navi. And Hashem said to Moshe at the time, you're right, remember that? I'm going to give you a lot of Nisim to do, but that's just temporary. Remember this whole discussion? That'll be enough for them just to trust that you're a great man and an Eved Hashem. As we say in this week's Parsha, Vayosha Hashem Es Yisrael Miad Mitzrayim. And it says, Vayaminu B'Hashem U'B'Moshe Avdo. Remember we talked about that? When it says they trusted Moshe, Hashem and Moshe, they trusted that Moshe was a great man and that he was an Eved Hashem and Hashem would do miracles for him. But that didn't mean that they trusted that he was speaking on behalf of God and legitimately, you know, was legitimized to give them a Torah. That they had the pasuk says they would have to come to Har Sinai and hear Moshe receive Nevuah, and then they would trust Moshe that he was considered, you know, worthy, not only worthy in Hashem's eyes, but they would consider him legitimate to hand to them, to give to them all of what would become Torah. Now that pasuk was, Hashem said to Moshe, Zelecha ha'os, Shanochi shalachticha, this is a sign I sent you. When Moshe said, how are they going to really believe you sent me? They're going to say, God didn't speak to you. Zelecha ha'os, Shanochi shalachticha, remember, Bohotziach es ha'am, when you take the nation out of Mitzrayim, Tavdun es Elokim alaharazeh, you're going to come back and serve Hashem on this mountain, and at that time they're going to hear me speak to you, and then they're going to trust you. Remember, but what we're focusing on now is the pasuk Hashem used is the words Hashem used is Behotziach es ha'am mimitzrayim ta'avdun, you will serve God es Elokim al ha'har hazeh, you will do avoda tefillah is avoda shebelev, you will serve God. How is Kabbalah's all malchus shemayim, which is what happened on Har Sinai when they said nasa v'nishma, which is Shema, Anochi Hashem, and Lo Yelocha, how is that Avoda? What is the Tefillah there? That's our question. Hashem even refers to Kabbalah's Ol Malcha Shemaim as an Avoda. That's what we're working with. Where in Shema is Tefillah? Where in Shema is Avoda? Service, Avoda Shebelev. We're used to thinking of Kabbalah's Ol Malcha Shemaim as a one-way street. We're at the bottom of the mountain. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on the top of the mountain. Here he reveals his Torah to us, and we are Makabel, and we accept it. But obviously, when we say it's an Avoda, there's a whole bunch of work that starts with us. We're doing something. And we know that Avoda is basic to... The concept of avoda means it is initiated by man, because way back by Adam, remember that, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu set the whole world up to, you know, kind of, to, you know, in the Bria, in the creation, Hashem set everything up to go, but he didn't press the go button. And the pasuk tells us ki Adam ayin lavod es hadama, because man wasn't there to work the land. And Rashi says avoda tefila, first man has to pray. And then the rain will fall, and then everything will burst into life. So Hashem set it all up, created everything, but it didn't actually push the start button, which means our vision of the Bria, that the whole world is, you know, flowering meadows and big green trees and everything, that didn't happen till the end, till right before Shabbos, till man was created. It was desolate and dark and dull. Maybe it was a little light with Tzar, but there was nothing growing. When man davened, the rain came, and then everything started to you know, burst into existence. So the avoda again is man's avoda, man initiating, man reaching out, man praying, which engenders a response from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So where's the avoda of Kabbalah Satorah? So the answer is, and Rishbir brings us down, that the avoda of Kabbalah Satorah is praying, desiring, yearning to be Makabel the Torah. Hashem cannot give the Torah to somebody who's not yearning to receive it. You can't feed someone who's not hungry. The Torah can only be received by someone who opens their hearts and creates a void, and then the Torah can be received and fill that void. The whole Kabbalah Satorah begins with Klal Yisrael doing avoda, prayer, requesting, wanting to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to receive the Torah of Hashem. That's the secret. Shema Yisrael is prefaced, the whole nature of Shema Yisrael is that it can't even, a person can't even begin to be mekabel, to accept, unless first they've prepared themselves with a great yearning and a great hunger, a tefillah, a prayer in their heart and in their mind that they need something, a bakasha. You can give somebody the most beautiful, you know, meaningful ideas about the purpose of life. If they're not hungry, if they're not bothered by the problem, they don't feel something's missing, nothing, you can't accomplish anything. Everything starts with a hunger that Klal Yisrael have to either cultivate, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu cultivates for us, helps us cultivate, sometimes through Yisurim, sometimes through, you know, just, you know, the ability to think and to try to understand what's going on that cultivates. But the point here is that the yearning for the to accept Torah is a person saying basically, without Torah, without a sense of my absolute bond, my that I'm caught up, wrapped up with it, you know, life is purposeless for me, so this is what I want to receive. Now, what we're saying here really is that the Oz Yashir, what happened on the Yam, is that intermediary phase between Mitzrayim and Kabbalah Satorah. How do you get a nation who don't even think they have a future worth living for, okay, who are like the Egyptians, so close to Avodah Zarah, that when it says Hamayim Lehem Choma, the water was like a wall, the Chazal tell us, Chema, the water was angry. He says, why should we split? Elu over the Avodah Zarah, Elu over the Avodah Zarah. They're like, even intellectually, they're so far from the concept of a single God and all the ramifications, the pristine ideas of monotheism that the Avos began to teach us. They've lost it. They've, you know, they're so assimilated intellectually. You know, why are we splitting for these people? Why are we saving these and not these? You know, who are they? They're not that different from the Egyptians anymore, even in their belief system. So, how do you get a nation like that, who is enslaved, who doesn't have the confidence to feel that they play a major role in history, that they themselves don't quite understand the God that they're about to serve, the concept of a single God and all its ramifications? How do you get a nation like that to stand at Har Sinai and do the avoda of wanting, desiring what will become all of Judaism? Desiring to feel in their hearts the three aspects of Shema, that there's nothing but Hashem, there's Echad, nothing matters, nothing has meaning, nothing is real besides, you know, what is real to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The tremendous love that is so close, that brings the two so close that it's not worth even living. The person's greatest instinct is the survival instinct. As a person wants to survive because they love themselves so much, they love their own life and their survival and their existence, so that intense desire to exist, and for love, that's the same feeling that a person has or is expected to have, Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, that life is all about, there's nothing worth living more than, you know, there's no other reason to live other than this. And a total commitment to know everything, to learn, to pass it on, and to set up a whole society based on these ideas, to have it consume one's life. How do you get a nation from point A to point B? That's the question. So the answer is through the events of the Yam. The events on the Yam created in Klal Yisrael such a yearning, such a huge desire to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a bond of oneness and love and have it, as we said, consume their lives. That's the transition. That's how what they had to pass through, in a sense, to be able to get to do the avoda that led to Kabbalah Satorah. So what were the accomplishments, what were the achievements, the experiences of Klal Yisrael at the Yam? How were they transformed at the Yam? And they state how they were transformed in a number of ways. And they correspond to these three aspects of Kabbalah Satorah. The concept of the oneness of Hashem. Here, the Malachim said, they're over there, Avodah Zarah, practically. Here, at the Har Sinai, it's Anochi Hashem Elokecha Lo Yeh Elokecha Elohim Acherim, the oneness. How do you move from there to there in a few weeks? Okay. So they experienced at the Yam the oneness of Hashem. How? Not by the splitting of the sea. That's not even mentioned in the Shira. We'll talk about it later. They experience the oneness of Hashem by what they do talk about in the Shira. They say, Yemincha Hashem, your right hand Hashem, Nedari Bekoach, Yemincha Hashem, Tirat Oyev. Your right hand is glorified with strength. Your right hand smashes your enemies. Now, we have a right and a left. What the left hand for most people is the weaker hand. But everybody has, except rare people, a weaker hand. So what's the point of a stronger and a weaker? It's a very basic concept. There's the strength and the helper. There's always, that's how life is set up. There's the thrust, the main energy, and the associated, necessary, helpful, side effect, so to speak, that everything, all great things have many more mundane and more basic things that help them move forward, and they're valuable too. But here we have two right hands of Hashem. One right hand, Chazal tell us, is destroying the Egyptians, and one right hand is saving the Jews. In other words, in the same Midas HaRachamim, the same moment, you're seeing Din and Rachamim, but then what you're really seeing is that in Midas HaRachamim, two things are happening. The Jews are being saved and the Egyptians are being destroyed. How do you see the Midas HaRachamim? That each Egyptian, as they go on to say, is going to suffer according to the way they made the Jewish people suffer. Some like lead, some like straw, right? You remember this? Some will get turned around because they were worse. Some will die right away because they were a little better. The point is, in Midas HaRachamim, everything is happening. Salvation, punishment, redemption, Midah Keneged Midah, it's all one. They saw the absolute oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the Yam. And how do they respond to that? They respond with these words, with the same strength, all the Midas are coming together. They experience that. They experience that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can, there is no contradiction or competing forces here. Everything is one. Now we, in regular life, we cannot see how all things are one. To us, everything in this world, the Torah starts with the Beis, everything is two. Everything is something and it's contradiction. There's Ahava and Yira, Chesed and Din, man, woman, night, day. Everything exists in contrast. That's in this world. But Hashem is Aleph, and everything is one, but we cannot see from that perspective here. Even when we ask Hashem, say in Sechar Tov, give a good reward, we know in our world, even a reward can't be fully good, because if this one is getting more, it means someone else is getting less. Nothing is completely one. But from Hashem's world, before everything diffracts into its many channels, everything is one, but you never glimpse that. Here on the Yam, they saw it. All one, all at the same second. There was something they had never seen. That's Hashem, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And what they saw is what we reiterate in Shema. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem. There is Elokeinu, Midas Hadin, sandwiched between two Hashems, Midas HaRachamim. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem. Now what that means is we know what Midas Hadin is. And sometimes we even know, and sometimes we even experience that the Midas HaDin that we had to endure, the difficulties we had to endure, in the end will be seen really as good. In the end it will be seen as it was all Rachmanis, it was all Chesed. Okay? But what we never see, is the Hashem before Midas HaDin. The Hashem before Midas HaDin is the Hashem that's Makdim Refua Lamaka. That's the Hashem before Elokim. First there's Hashem Yudkei Vavke, who sets up the Refua before the cure, before the illness. Then there's Midas Hadin that we endure, that we fully experience, and we have. And then there's Hashem who comforts us, who shows us in retrospect, in the end of days, how it was all for the good. But the big picture, Hashem, the refuah before the makkah, you know, we never really get a glimpse of that. That we won't know till retrospect. But here they also repeat that. They say, Mi chamocha be'elim Hashem. At the end, towards the end, right? Pasuk Yud Aleph. Mi chamocha be'elim, Chazal say be'elim, be'ilmim. Who is like you among the deaf, Hashem? What does that mean, who is like you among the deaf? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for so long, in the Elohim phase, in the Midas Hadin phase, you heard your disgrace, in other words, Klal Yisrael being disgraced, and you were like deaf. You didn't hear it. They were disgracing Klal Yisrael, and you didn't respond. It was as if you were deaf to it. What was that for? Why were you so far from us, so to speak? Why did you hide yourself in the Holocaust? Why were you deaf to the cries of Klal Yisrael? But now, at the end, they say, who is like you? Even the deafness now we see was all part of the chesed. How's that? Because we say, Tzalalu ka'oferes b'mayim adirim. Right before that. Right before that we say, Tzalalu ka'oferes. They sank. Yeah, here we are. They sank like lead. Who did? The adirim. So here Chazal say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu raised up the Egyptians to a state of great might and power, adirim, to be adirim, which means, you know, strong, sovereign, powerful, influential. He raised them up to that state, so that when he destroyed them, it would be that much more dramatic, and everybody would see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could bring down even the mightiest. So there they see that the so-called deafness of Hashem in the difficulty, and the fact that when they were so persecuted, the Egyptians were so dominant, that itself was part of the plan. That was already Makdim Refuah to Mak. It was already kind of preparing their downfall by elevating them, so it would be that much greater and that much more impressive and that much more of a lesson to be learned. So now Klal Yisrael see the whole thing. They see the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They experience that. And when they see that, they want to see it more. They begin to be thirsty to see that regularly. The next thing they experience is V'ahavtes Hashem, the great love. We said that the one a person loves the most, really, is themselves. We forgive ourselves the most. We want to survive more than anything. Even the great love we have for our children, if we really face the facts, is just a huge display of self-love, because we think they're us, you know, how cute they are, they look like us, how cute they are, they act like us. We vicariously live through them. They, you know, they give us meaning, etc. It's self-love. To love someone else as much as we love ourselves is a great feat. And even V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, you know, love someone as you love yourself. Rambam says it's not really possible. What it means is love another person the way you would expect them to love you, knowing that they wouldn't love you like they love themselves. In other words, you would expect your neighbor to be kind to you up to a certain point. So that's the way you should love them back. You know, love them according to the way you would expect them to love you. You don't expect some stranger or some neighbor to love me as, you know, to love us as much as they love themselves. So that's, Rambam says, within reason. So people love themselves. What Bnei Yisrael state here, when they see the oneness of Hashem, and they see the salvation, and they see the meaning of all their suffering, and even they begin to see the whole plan, they say, Azi v'zimraska, in the beginning, Pasuk Beis, the might, Hashem is my might, and my zimra, lezamer, to sing, and to praise, because Vaihili Lishuya saves me, Ze Keli Va'anvehu. This is my God, and here's where Chazal say it was so clear to them, the revelation, they could point to it. But you know Va'anvehu. That's a contraction of two words, Ani Vahu. And in those words we read, between the lines, or in the construction of that word, that Klal Yisrael developed a huge yearning to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Vahu, me and him, that we're one. that we're in this together, that there is no distinction between my love for myself and my desire that I survive, and my love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and my desire that my existence should be bound up with Hashem's existence. There's no more distinction. They saw here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was protecting them specifically, guiding them, had a great future in store for them, was showing them miracles, punishing their enemies, and all they wanted to do was be connected, anivahu, that there's no more distinction between I and Hashem, it's one. That's the ahavtes Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol ma'odecha. They began to yearn for that. And thirdly, the third part of Shema is the commitment. It's not the mitzvahs yet, even though it says it's not really Kabbalah on mitzvahs, that's the next one. It's the fact that everything Hashem taught us, the knowledge, the setting up a whole life based on it, is something precious to us, and we will transmit it to our children. This is our lifestyle. This is who we are. This is our identity. We want it to be our identity. Here we get into a profound idea. The Mechilta says the following. Mechilta says, by the splitting of the sea, because we do make reference to the Jewish people walking on dry land. For example, Kivas is Paro Bruchba Vashavis Sochayam, right? Vayashav Hashem Esayam. Where is it? Vayashav Hashem Aleim Esayam Bnei Shol Chubi Yabasha. We do speak about walking in dry land in the middle of the Yam. That was also a critical experience for Klal Yisrael, and on a profound and mystical level. The concept is that the separating of the waters and the appearance of the dry land and Klal Yisrael surviving because they had dry land to stand on. Thank you. Gray Odyssey on the street. So, the fact that there's dry land, okay, reminds us of another time where HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced the waters apart and caused dry land to appear. Obviously in creation. This is very similar to the second day where Hashem said, Yikavu Hamayim, let the waters gather together in designated places and let the dry land appear. So the Mechilta says here the following. It says, La'adam harishon, La'adam harishon, shehu yechidi, that he is one and unique. Asiti lo yabasha, I made for him dry land, shenemar, vayomer lakim yikavu hamayim, as it says, and God said that the waters separate and gather. U'la'adat kedoshim, and to this congregation of kedoshim, of holy people, eini osei yabasha, I shouldn't make yabasha. Now, what is that? The Mechilta is telling us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is comparing the fact that he made yabasha for Adam, so too he's making yabasha for Klal Yisrael. So what was the point of making dry land for Adam? Because Adam needed a place to exist on. Hashemayim Shemayim LaHashem, the heavens, the waters are Hashem's domain. Humans can't live on the Shemayim or on the Mayim, Yesh Mayim. Ha'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam, the earth, that's for people to live on. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated the waters, he, in a sense, if you think philosophically or more poetically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a makom for man. Made a makom for man. Had Hashem not separated the original creation waters, man wouldn't have a place to exist on. Now, Klal Yisrael. What this is saying is, really, Ha'aretz Nasan Lefnei Adam, the whole earth is given to Adam. But in this world we live in, nobody really believes that Klal Yisrael deserve a place on this earth. That we are legitimately, that we legitimately have a claim to a place on this earth. In other words, if they had their will, Klal Yisrael would not exist at all. They throw us, so to speak, into the ocean. This earth is not big enough for everybody and Klal Yisrael. They don't want they don't want to admit. They don't want to make space for Klal Yisrael's legitimate dwelling here on this earth. Ha'aretz nesan levnei Adam, but not for Klal Yisrael in their minds. The fact is that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did on the Yam, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu displayed through the moving of the waters and the creating of dry land, that he is making a place for Klal Yisrael on dry land, as he did in the Bria. He's giving Klal Yisrael a makom to exist on. Which means to say that if not for that, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a sense, testifying that he's willing to change the Bria and make a place for Klal Yisrael, because in reality there's no place for Klal Yisrael anymore on the land. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making a new place for them. A whole nother understanding of our right to exist. Now we're talking more philosophically here. Klal Yisrael understand that when they're walking on dry land and Hashem has moved the waters apart, that they legitimately have a right to set up their life here and their society here. Hashem has made a makom for them. And if it's not on the land, because nobody wants to give them an inch, it's still in Hashem's, Hashem has made a makom for them. In Hashem's world, they have a makom, and they have a right to set up their life, and they will set it up, and Hashem will protect and guard that place that they set up. And sometimes, Klal Yisrael, we have no makom on the land. We take our makom with us in our heart. And what is that place we carry with us? Our trust in Hashem. The knowledge that we have a right to survive, and we're the reason the rest of the world survives. That's our makom. So when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made dry land and made a makom for Klal Yisrael, what that is an awareness in Klal Yisrael that of all people that exist, we are the people that most legitimately have a right to exist, that Hashem wants to exist, that Hashem is making a place to exist, over and above, despite everybody's refusal or to acknowledge that or to accept that, that we will persevere. We will survive, and we will have an anchor here. So when Klal Yisrael see that, they understand that their survival is guaranteed. They play the most important role in the history of the world, in the history of humanity, that Hashem set up a place for them to function on, to a basis for them to develop and set up their society and radiate their truths and their knowledge to the rest of the world, and they become full of yearning. They become full of yearning to set up, to establish a whole life based on this knowledge of how fundamental we are. That we are like Adam HaRishon. The whole world was created. The Yabasha was made for us. The dry land was made for us. So we should have a place, that we should work from a place. And the fact that nobody realizes that is not our deficiency, it's their deficiency. So Klal Yisrael want to establish a makom, and they want to set up a society, and they want to pass it on for generations. They want to have a whole national life going on with you know, based on what Hashem said, which is the third aspect of Shema. To keep all of these words on your heart and pass it on to the children and put it on your mezuzahs and put in your tefillin. Set up a whole life on the knowledge that you exist and you have a right to exist in Hashem of all, in the whole world. Hashem made a place for Adam, and now is making a place again for the next Adam, Klal Yisrael. Now the Gemara says, "Atem Yisrael kruyim Adam, you Klal Yisrael are called Adam." The ein ein avoda, really it says ein the ovdei kochavim umazalas kruyim Adam. Those people that worship stars and constellations are not called Adam. If Hashem made a place for Adam, we are Adam. Now what does that mean? It doesn't mean that we're human and they're not human. We don't believe in that. Because look, on the Yam, it says that the Malachim wanted to sing Shira, and Hashem said, Masa yodai tovlim bayam, my handiwork, my creations are drowning, and you want to sing Shira? They're tzelem Elokim. You can't sing Shira when they're drowning. He told that to the Malachim, but he didn't tell that to Klal Yisrael. That's a whole nother separate reason. But the point is, Hashem sees the creator, other creations, human beings, as Selam Elokim. So the Gemara is not saying we're human and they're not human. What the Gemara is saying is this. There was an original Adam. And the purpose of this original Adam was to bring the recognition of Hashem to the world. through children and grandchildren and filling up the planet, everybody together recognizing the Creator and serving Hashem. That was Adam's job, but Adam failed. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu waited, as we've spoken about, many, many, many years, until finally this moment. Here would be a people that would take, pick up where Adam left off, that would take upon themselves the job of Adam, to be Korei B'Shem Hashem, call out in the name of Hashem. And when they distinguish themselves as Adam, as willing to do this, as willing to follow Moshe out of Mitzrayim into a Midbar, willing to shecht the Korban Pesach, the Egyptian god, they had a few merits, very few, but they showed a willingness to move to a whole other place through the next stage. Then Hashem says, you are Adam. Now you are the only people that have taken upon yourselves the distinction and the role of Adam. So if I made a place for Adam, I'm not going to make a place for Klal Yisrael. They're the only reason the whole world exists. So when Klal Yisrael know this, they're filled with a yearning to have their knowledge of what eventually becomes the whole Torah and all the mitzvahs, you know, completely consume them, really, and color every aspect of their lives, and submit to it and gratefully accept it. This is all what has to take place before Hashem can give them a Torah. This is the avoda. So the yam, on the yam, Kadosh Baruch Hu sets up the nes so that the reactions of Klal Yisrael will be those of great yearning. Yearning for the oneness they saw, yearning for the love they saw, that the closeness, yearning for wanting to be completely surrounded by the lifestyle and the truths and the knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world. This is how they came out of the Yam. Now, when they came out of the Yam, Klal Yisrael collectively become known as Ivrim. Remember Avram HaIvri? Because everyone was on one side of the river, the Euphrates, and he crossed over to the other side. But that's just technical. I'm sure there were other people that crossed the river. What it really means is the whole world was on one side, and he was on the other side. And so it became with Klal Yisrael. When they came out of the Yam, the whole world was on one side, and Klal Yisrael had crossed through and were on the other side. We were called at that point Ivrim. And that is a title of distinction. By the way, in the just a side point, the most ancient references to the Jews are in the Rosetta Stone and ancient tablets they found, is the reference to a people called the Apiru, which the scientists seem, the archaeologists seem to think is the Hebrews, the Apiru, but they're not sure. It seems to be a reference to Ivri, Apiru. In any case, we became Ivrim. So getting back to our original question, what is the role of Az Yashir? According to the Zohar, according to the way it seems to have been done, at least in certain regions, Az Yashir is a preparatory phase for Shema. To recognize and relive the yearning that was cultivated in our hearts based on our experiences, and then with that yearning, want to be Mekabel Olam Malchus Shemayim, want to accept all of those aspects of Shema, and that's the avoda, that's the tefillah of Shema. That's what makes Shema really into a tefillah. So, interestingly enough, and with this we'll end, we have no mitzvah like we do on Pesach night to remember the events of crossing the sea. We have to remember the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but there's no mitzvah to remember Kriyas Yam Suf. Okay, what Rav Moshe Pirsch says is there's no need for a particular mitzvah to remember it, because those impressions that were made still beat in the heart of every Jew, whether we know it or not. We still desire to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The most furthest away Jew has a pintle yid. Something's making them crazy. Something's making them neurotic. They're not sure what it is. It's a desire to be connected to what's MS. It's a desire to have meaning in their life. It's a desire to see that a human being, a Jew, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu can't be separated. And any time we ignore these yearnings, we suffer psychologically, emotionally. We just suffer because they're the natural yearnings of a Jew. They can't be denied. So there's no particular mitzvah to remember it. It exists. It is in our hearts and in our souls. We can't really even escape what we experienced on the Yom. And to that extent, we say that, you know, as you know, what a shifcha, what a maidservant saw on the Yom, Yecheskel, the greatest of the Nevi'im, practically, you saw the Masa Merkava, you know, didn't see what a maidservant saw. In other words, what every Jew saw there made such a huge impression and was so basic to who we are today and will never leave us, that we still feel the reverberations of those experiences. And so Klal Yisrael speak about in the Shira those experiences, those transformative experiences. What they don't speak about, just to end, is the splitting of the sea. And you know what that tells us? My grandfather points out that the splitting itself was a nes galui, open miracle, right? And when a person experiences a nes galui, an open miracle, it's completely beyond anything in their, you know, in their spectrum that they know what that they're used to, that they can process. It comes from another dimension completely, and they don't even know how to speak about it. What Klal Yisrael can speak about is when the water went back to normal and drowned the Egyptians. That was their salvation. That was the water acting normally. That they can talk about because that's something they work with on a daily basis. But an open miracle, it's not even something a person can have the words to talk about. And that's the truth with us also. Sometimes a person has an experience where they feel so close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu or the clarity, the truth of the Torah and the mitzvos, or something they just learned is so obvious to them, and they have a sense of elevation, and they have that yearning, and they have that experience of being caught up for a moment in some type of exceptional, you know, almost like other dimensional kind of moment where they feel transcendent. It's not something you can describe to another person. It's not something you can really put in words. What you can put in words is the results of it. The results of it, that because of that, a person did another mitzvah, a person was a little strong. That you can put into words, like the Jews did. That the Egyptians drowned, that their enemies were destroyed, that they can put in words. But the actual nes, there are no words to really describe it. And they don't work with it. They don't talk about it. Okay, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Have a wonderful week.
Thank you.